Mountjoy, a Philly-based band that counts the Eagles' Jason Kelce among its growing legion of fans. Suburban Philly native Matt Quinn is the lead singer, always open to enhancing the creative process.
You know, I'm not a huge drinker, but I smoke weed. And I think I do it in the same way, like talk about letting your hands go. I think there is, like, when you're trying to truly free associate and maybe kind of unlock your subconscious in that way.
We'll get more into the head of Mountjoy's Matt Quinn, including his huge 76ers fandom, next on Fresh 24. Matt Quinn, Devon, Pennsylvania, Conestoga High School, lead vocalist for the great band Mountjoy, huge Philly sports fan, huge Sixers fan, of course. To quote Orange Blood, oh, I like that, oh, I like that, oh, I like that. That is awesome. Last August, in fact, you came home, you were at The Man playing before a sellout, and the Eagles' Jason Kelce comes on stage and you start doing the Eagles song. Was that surreal or was that surreal?
Honestly, it's as surreal as it gets. You know, I think just, I've said before, like when we started out, I always tried to make goals to, you know, so you don't just dig endlessly. You know, in sports, we don't really have like, or sorry, in music, we don't really have like a championship where it's clear end, but man, like I always just thought about coming back to Philly, and actually the original goal was, like, I remember saying I wanted to sell out the Fillmore here in Philly, and you know, to play a place that's obviously bigger than the Fillmore and have, you know, obviously a huge sports fan and have Jason Kelce up there. It still feels weird, man. I'll tell you, it's amazing.
And you did some work for his charity. Some of the proceeds from the concert went. Connor Barwin was there as well. Is that right?
Yeah. We've worked with Make the World Better, which is Connor Barwin's charity. And Be Philly is Jason Kelce's charity. And, you know, those guys are, I feel like everybody knows in the city, they've obviously had a huge impact on the field. And then they do such a good job giving back to the community. And yeah, we look up to them in that sense. So it was good to be a part of that.
All right. We're going to talk about the band, your rise to fame, how it all started growing up in the Philly area. We're going to have our halftime segment. I'm actually going to see also if some of my musical tastes vibe with your musical taste, but let's stay with sports right now. Just how big a Philly sports fan are you?
Oh, huge. You know, like I literally say, I have said in the past, I'm going to tell you this, I'm not blowing smoke. I have said to the band, we're coming in for a landing.
Wait a second. I got a copyright on that. You better watch how many times you use that.
I don't know if they all get it. Sam is from Philly and a big sports fan as well. So he gets my Philly sports related.
Sam Cooper, of course, who you started the band with.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're just huge. Like I'll be holding my phone, standing side stage about to go on, you know, watching the Sixers or whatever it is, and then hand my phone off sadly as I walk on, you know, if it's a big game or something like that. Yeah, huge. Just like, I feel like so many people out here just grew up watching and pulling for all the Philly teams.
How can you do that? How can you be off stage, ready to go on before thousands of people? I mean, don't you just have to like vibe, concentrate, think about what's going to happen? You're doing that, and then all of a sudden you're playing before thousands of people. How do you do that?
I think for me, what I learned is, like, personally, is just staying like as calm and as normal as we are now. And then just someone hands me a guitar is like the best way for me to perform, is to just, like, you know, I'm not like attached to wires up there getting slung all across the, you know, it's not a very physical performance for me. So like I just want to be, you know, you just as if I'm in your living room kind of thing. So I feel like it's better for me to be like, this is what I would be doing. The Sixers are on. It's almost a bummer. These people are interrupting my Sixers game. You know?
We're going to be delayed until after the final 10 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. We've had some ones where, the Eagles Super Bowl run, we played a show that it was fourth down. I don't know if, I'm sure people remember, but the Julio Jones incompletion in the end zone there, a moment where they don't win the Super Bowl if that play doesn't happen. And we walked on like I had to walk on the stage before the play. And I've got my friend is standing there, and I just said, just give me a thumbs up. And we're about halfway through the first song, and he's going nuts side stage. And I'm like, yes, you know, just playing. It gives you juice. So we've had great moments with it.
Wait, dude, you're a rock star. Can't you be another minute late? I mean, the world revolves around you, right?
You know, we always try to, I actually just am such a fan of music that we are, and now hopefully fans don't get on me for this if we're not, but there is a reason if we're coming on the stage late. It's like people aren't getting checked in fast enough or something. I don't get the whole, you know, people paid and you're only there for so long. Play for as long as they'll let you kind of thing. So.
Well, I know you're a big Bruce guy, and we know Bruce will be up there, what, 2.5-3 hours sometimes, right?
Yeah, I should say, I think for us right now, we're probably not playing as long as Bruce, but he's got the catalog and the energy and the, you know, he's got it all. So he can go forever.
You'll get there. Did you play sports growing up?
Yeah, I played soccer, played a little football. I played some basketball. I'm pretty tall, but I was never any good at basketball. Loved the sport. That one was the sad one. That was like my, you know, I wish I could have been better at basketball, but couldn't shoot it. So that makes it tough.
So you watched others shoot it, including the Sixers. What are your earliest Sixer memories?
You know, I wore my Sixers Iverson Slam cover.
I see it. I see it.
Yeah, I just Iverson's probably my earliest memories. Just was such a huge fan of him, and I feel like he's one of those guys that'll obviously go down in history. But he just matched the energy of the city so well, and everybody was. I was dribbling between my legs out of bounds. You know, everybody was wanting to have the step back that he had through the legs. And those are probably my earliest memories. Obviously the 2001 team, I remember just got off to such a good start and stayed hot. And that was maybe my, you know, probably everyone's favorite Iverson team.
Did you ever meet him or any of the Sixers at any point?
I've never met a Sixer now that I think about it. No, I never met a Sixer.
We got to make that happen.
That would be awesome. I feel like I'm meeting a Sixer. Like you're a part of this whole thing. Like I feel like
thanks.
This is, you know.
Yeah, I'm just the fat kid who grew up in Northeast Philly thinking that I'd be the announcer for the Sixers one day, and it actually happened. Don't ask me how. And now that I'm retired, I can't believe it happened. But it's all about you. And not about me, but we could talk about that another time. What are your thoughts about Joel Embiid and winning a championship?
Yeah, I think Embiid in a vacuum is totally capable of winning a championship. I think, people get upset about losing in the playoffs, which they've done. But, I think he's an unbelievable player. And I think it just takes getting hot at the right time. I think the Miami Heat have shown that over and over again, where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, you just got to be playing well and together and making shots. You know, I think that it's such a, I don't know, even watching college basketball, it's like, it's always a make or miss thing, but I feel like if the Sixers get hot at the right time, there's no reason that they can't win. I like the idea of Nick Nurse coming in and maybe that just shoots some life into the legs and they play a little faster maybe. I don't know. I feel like they've played, I don't want to get too pretending I know about basketball, but I think they just maybe played it a little slow in the past. And obviously having a giant MVP center, you maybe have to slow it down a little bit. But I think they, you know, maybe they speed it up, play a little more defense, and who knows?
Yeah. Favorite Sixer of all time?
Ooh. I feel like I have to say Iverson. I'm wearing an Iverson shirt.
Yeah.
But I love Embiid too. He's been so amazing, and in his own way, he's such an amazing character, and oh man, he's so funny. They're both up there for me.
Any similarities between good chemistry and what it does for a band and good chemistry and what it does for a sports team?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the reasons I have been able to do well in music is how much I, you know, pay attention to sports and playing sports and being on teams myself. And those relationships they're huge. I mean, you know, it's like, I think Kelsey was saying this in that amazing documentary of his, but it's like, you know, you can inspire belief in each other, and it is a crazy thing, you know, like the NBA guys and all these guys, they're going out and performing in front of tens of thousands of people. So it's like, it's one thing to be like really good at shooting a basketball, but it's a whole other thing to perform in front of that many people. And it requires a group, I think, that believes in each other, that, like, you know, when you aren't making your shots or you're guitar solo isn't what you wanted it to be, it's like, you know, you have people there to be like, hey, let's stay steady, you know, you're gonna have ups and downs. And I think it's the more connected in music in so many ways, you know, we improvise, so there's literally things where you're trying to communicate without talking, and if you've worked with people or you know their tendencies or what they like to do or how they like to even signal that maybe they're kind of running out of gas on a solo or something, you know, it's like, and then, you know, obviously it's your job to pick them up or do whatever it is. So I just think, and we're building that all the time, and working on that all the time musically. And I know in sports, you can see the teams that are connected, you know, when the bench gets up and gets excited, mm-hmm. like that stuff matters. I think anyway, I've never played in the NBA, but I think it really does matter.
That said, sports history, music history is replete with teams where individuals, you know, this guy's all right. They're not necessarily best friends, but somehow when they're on stage or on the court or on the field or on the ice, they make beautiful music together, if you will. Is that true in some respects with Mountjoy, as best as you could talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's micro, like just days, right, where there's a disagreement or maybe you are mad at somebody because a joke that landed sideways at your expense or something like that, you know, and but then, you know, yeah, when you walk out on the stage, there's that adrenaline rush, and I think a lot of that stuff just goes away. I think, to me, my perspective on that is that, you know, those two people are still probably going to be beefing when the game is over, but your body just gets filled with adrenaline, and you know, those sort of chemicals take over, and who you are as an I guess an athlete or a musician, you know, I think is that chemical rush in so many ways, and you kind of reach that flow. And yeah, I mean, if you're good enough at what you do, then it probably doesn't matter. You're able to overcome it.
I am fascinated with the creative process. Take me through, in a bullet point form, let's say, the creation of a song. How does that work?
Yeah, you know, I think the annoying answer is it depends, but I think for the most part, it's really just like last night, like it's me sitting here in Philly with a guitar, just playing. You know, I always try to remember, like, you know, I think the easiest record to make is your first one, because you're pulling from all the times you ever sat on the couch and strummed and were like, that's nice. You know, like, what's that? You know, all the exploration you've ever done in your life leads up to this one moment. And so you're pulling from years worth of work, whereas like now they're, you know, have some old songs, but for the most part you're just creating and you're doing it in a tighter and tighter time frame. So it's really just sitting on it. For me, it's just sitting playing guitar like I love to do. That's what I, you know, that's what got me here, I think. And I'm just playing and sort of free associating at the very beginning, just no TV. I usually put my phone on voice record, but like, so I can't really see it. And I'm just playing for the love of music and letting my hands go and all that stuff. And then occasionally you'll come across something and you'll think to yourself, there's something here. And then you kind of, it's like a rabbit hole, you know, you just sort of start singing the same thing over and over again. And then another thing maybe comes out of that. And then, you know, for us, once I sort of hammer out okay, I've got a little something. I can play an acoustic guitar. I'll record it into my phone, or maybe it's recorded because I had it recording, fortunately. And then I'll send it to the band, or we'll get together and start working it out. And we just have, like, you know, we're lucky that we have great players in the band, and they just, you know, it starts to build on itself from there. When people, other people's ideas start expanding upon your ideas, and then maybe you see it from a new perspective now that there's drums on it or whatever it is. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. There's a I think it's a Pablo Picasso quote. I don't want to misattribute it, but something I think about often now is like when I'm just sitting playing guitar is the, it's like inspiration exists, but it finds you working. You know, you've got to kind of be like just painting or playing guitar or, you know, trying to be inspired, I guess.
You use the phrase, you just let my hands go. And when I heard that, I almost got chills. It's like you lapse into a different dimension or a different state of consciousness. Is that accurate?
I think so. I think that music is a different state of consciousness for me. And I think for listeners too, you know, I got into music because I was a listener. You know, music was on in the house growing up, and it moves you, you know, it takes you somewhere. I think playing music is the same way. Like when you get to a certain level where you can just sort of turn your mind off, which is such a gift in this world, and just sort of go wherever the sounds are sort of suggesting. I think it is for me a necessary secondary state of consciousness for sure.
So it sounds more like musical phrasing, we'll put it, because I'm not really a musician, but musical phrasing or certain combinations of notes come to you first, as opposed to, you know, she broke my heart and I got to write about that, or, you know, I had to put my dog asleep, my longtime friend, I have to write about that. Is it different with different songwriters? I suppose it is.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think I answer those sit-downs with my guitar with an intention, you know, like something bad just happened, so maybe things are feeling sad. But what I've personally found, and I think you're right, I think it's different for every artist, but what I've personally found is that if I try to describe to you, you know, I'm looking at my, like, pumpkins on this table here. It's like if I try to write a song about a pumpkin, it's going to be a really bad song. But if I try to, like, generally intend in my mind that, like, I want to write something about the feeling of, like, being in the fall, and, like, I kind of want to use the word pumpkin if it happens, if it doesn't, it's fine. You know, you're kind of, like, just trying to let yourself be a little more artistic than maybe you'll get there. Maybe you will really beautifully describe a pumpkin in a way that's, like, you already know what a pumpkin looks like, but the music's job, I think, is to try to make you recreate a pumpkin in your mind, sort of, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does.
Yeah.
You have one woman among the five members of your band, Jackie McLeod. She's a keyboardist. If anybody goes on YouTube, she is unreal, some of the stuff that she lays down. I'm all about feminine energy and perspective. What does she bring to your group that perhaps a man wouldn't?
Well, like you said, first and foremost, she's the best piano player I've ever seen in my life. So that's a huge part of it. And then, you know, yeah, I think she has a different perspective. She came from a classical, like upbringing, in the church. And so she is just on a different level, physically on her instrument than I am, at least speak for myself, but I think than most. And I think therefore, like what I talk about sort of like letting your hands move, like, well, when her hands move, it's like, it's sort of another worldly experience, I think. And so, you know, we started out with relatively simple folk songs. So I think adding the most complex and technically difficult music, like adding that brain to the room, I think it really helps set us apart, you know. And I think she, obviously, you know, we're always aware that she's the only girl, you know, especially in the beginning, we're in a van, we're traveling around, you know, her sacrifice, to be doing this. Like, I think that's part of, you know, when times are tough, you're like, hey, we're all like really sacrificing here. And I think that part of it in terms of like knowing that it's gotta be harder for her than it is for me, you know, in terms of comfort level and stuff like that. So And obviously she's a great person and we love her. So all of those things.
Nice. We're going to talk about how all this started, including you dropping out of law school, of all things, and what you think makes your band successful, and anything else that pops up. This is awesome. But first, you know, I got to stop here and do the halftime segment. This is our six pack. It's this or that. And basically, I'm going to give you a choice between two things and you just pick, and don't take time to think about it. Just, you know, from the gut. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
NBA fans, the wait is over. Basketball is back, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is celebrating with an unbeatable offer. New customers can score $200 instantly in bonus bets for throwing down $5 on the NBA. Win or lose, it doesn't matter. You'll start the season with an instant dub. And with DraftKings Parlays, everyone's got a shot at even bigger basketball wins. String together multiple bets from the same game or build your parlay across multiple games for a shot at making your payday even sweeter. Basketball's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code ZUMA. New customers can get $200 in bonus bets instantly for betting just $5. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code ZUMA. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/basketball. Terms for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms and responsible gaming resources. Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience.
Philly cheesesteak or Philly soft pretzel?
Cheesesteak.
Center City or South Jersey?
Center City.
Gritty or Philly fanatic?
Philly fanatic.
Meek Mill or Hall & Oates?
Hall & Oates.
Dr. J or Allen Iverson, Sixers throwback?
Ooh, I'll go Allen Iverson. I got to stay consistent.
Yeah. Liberty Bell or Rocky Steps?
Rocky Steps.
Okay. I was really excited about this one. I'm going to give you a handful of artists from my music library, and you tell me if you have them in your music library. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Burna Boy.
Nope.
You know Burna Boy, of course, right? I know you know Burna Boy.
I think so.
He's reggae, like heavily, like hip hop, heavily, but heavily influenced by reggae. Okay. Pat Metheny.
No.
Jazz guitarist. Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
Tame Impala.
Yes.
The Roots.
Yes.
Speaking of Philly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's, you know what? I feel pretty good about 3 out of 5. And I could have gone really, I don't know. Do you like old school stuff? Do you like classic rock, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I'm going to tell you my Paul McCartney story. And I've told this before, but I have a reason for telling it. I was working out. I was still announcing the Sixers games. I'm out of Four Seasons in Washington, D.C. And I look over and I'm on a treadmill. And two treadmills over is Sir Paul. And, you know, he's listening to music. And I'm saying to myself, who is he listening to?
All right.
Who are you, your go-tos and why? You know, you just got to kick back and chill, and this is who I go to. Who is that?
You know what's funny? So I grew up listening to some Grateful Dead, Allman Brothers, like a lot of the classic rock stuff. But recently I was just having a conversation about how I think in a sort of roundabout way, obviously people know about him, but I think Bob Marley and the Wailers are among the most underrated sort of at that top of the line. I think the Beatles come up a lot, as they should, Sir Paul and all that. But I just think the depth of catalog, the quality of the band and what they were able to accomplish, I feel like there's an argument that he's the greatest songwriter of all time.
When you're composing a song, are you thinking, this is something that's really meaningful to me? Or are you thinking, hey, with these licks, I think it could be really, in these hooks, I think it'd be really popular?
I think hopefully both. Oftentimes, if the lick comes first, I'm always thinking, I mean, even recall thinking this last night, like, okay, this is good. This will work. But what will make it transcendent is if it can like really move people with what it's trying to say.
Take me back to the beginning. How did all this start?
You know, I think just a love of music and not so much a love of anything else. You know, I was working, you know, I'd been in bands and, had some small success. You know, I think I won a battle of bands at Milk Boy back in the day.
Milk Boy Studios in Center City. I hear you.
And
there's one in Ardmore too, I think. Is that still there?
I was going to say, I think this was the Ardmore one. The one in Center City was like, that one has like a too big of a crowd for where I was really at. I was coffee shopping at that point. But
got it. Okay. All right.
But yeah, you know, I had some small success and I kind of gave up on it because it just wasn't really happening, as is the case most of the time. And I followed my girlfriend at the time out to Los Angeles, got a job kind of in the legal related world, and thought I'd do copyright stuff and try to stay around music, doing intellectual property stuff to protect people's music. I thought that was a cool way to...
Like as an attorney?
Yeah.
And so you're going to law school, right?
I was doing law school night classes, working a full-time job during the day, and then at night driving in LA traffic downtown to do law school. And it was a lot. and I, you know, what little time I had, I was just, music has always been my sort of Prozac, if you will. And so I was playing guitar as much as I could, and these songs started popping out, and I was there with Sam, who, you know, just kind of was there also chasing a job. And we started getting together, and you know, it's just like what I tell every young artist is like, I think you know, like I knew I'd been doing music for a while and I felt like I had made good songs, some of which now are part of Mount Joy and have done quite well. But I had this feeling that some of these songs were on a different level and were connecting. You know, I don't want to take up too much time telling this story, but I'll never forget.
Go for it. We got time.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, I don't know if the timeline to date this was, there was so much buildup to Pacquiao and Mayweather fighting. And as a fan of sports, not a huge boxing guy, but I was, of course, like everyone else, intrigued. And, you know, we didn't have a ton of cash, so we got like a bunch of people together and we were watching this fight, which I don't know if people remember, but it took forever for them to come on as they're wont to do. And there was a bunch of time and there's acoustic guitar in the corner of the room. And I was like, you know, I have this song that I really like. And the song's Astrovan and ends up being a big song for us. But I played it for that room. And that's probably the most people I'd ever played it for. And there was just this feeling where it's like people almost, you know, people were like happy they liked the song. But I could tell that they almost didn't know what to do with themselves. They were kind of like, what is that? Like, how did you, you know, like, and usually like, you know, someone plays a song, acoustic guitar guy and at the party, it's sort of like, all right, thanks, man. Thanks for that. But there was just this feeling that I had created something different. And yeah, I mean, as soon as that song went on like Spotify, we put it up on Spotify, it went viral within Spotify. And next thing you know, you're on this sort of whirlwind. So I think it's just, I don't know. Obviously I got struck by fortunate to get struck by lightning, and like these songs came to me. And I really do feel like if you're like an artist out there, it's like you kind of know, and then once you have that thing, just don't be scared to get in the van and go for it,
or the Astrovan as the case may be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's quite a story, because it was really just an understated way of beginning to make yourself big. It's just uploading your song to Spotify. That's, you know, how does that happen? Or how do you think it happened? Or why do you think it happened?
Yeah, so we were fortunate. You know, I feel like anyone that has success on these giant, you know, there's so many songs. It was that we got on, this was the beginning, I guess, of playlisting. And now people who are artists listening to this will probably roll their eyes, because it becomes the bane of your existence a bit. It's like you're trying to get your songs on these playlists and whatnot. But this was the very beginning, and we got on some sort of playlist, which was sort of our break, in the sense that these playlists have, you know, 100,000 listeners or whatever it is. And then once it gets in there, you know, they're just a data company. So it's like, hey, you know, they can see, are people skipping this right away? Are people listening to 2/3 of the way, whatever their metrics are. And so it started just doing well within these playlists. I think it was a goofy, you know, in terms of like, as far as marketing goes, it's like Jesus Drives an Astro Van is even if it's not melodically catchy, it maybe catches your ear or something enough for you to stick around. So I think it just was the right song at the right time, and it started doing well. And, you know, I'm in law school, and I remember calling my parents and being like, you know, it's doing like a couple hundred thousand streams a day. And I remember, like, astutely, my mom being like, is that good? Like, well, because there's no, like, and it's a good question. Like, I still, to this day, it's like, it's all funny numbers, you know. It's sort of like, there's really not a ton of money in it. So it's not like, you know, that number of streams, I probably made a handful of dollars. So it's like, it's this really hard thing to measure, but you could just tell there was something happening within the app, you know? And yeah, I guess at that point I dropped out of law school and just really went for it.
So it wasn't like you were literally touring the country in an Astro Van playing before 50 people a night in every possible honky tonk you could find. This is a real digital success story. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, totally. It starts that way, and then it ends up being the sort of in a van for a few years and really grinding it out. But, you know, this is me taking my lunch break to check these numbers that are like piling up. And, you know, at one point I think we were like, I don't know exactly, like the number one viral song on Spotify or something like that. And, you know, I'm literally like in a law school library doing what I got to do. And then, you know, you go and you can refresh and see the streams are piling up. And that's what it was in the very beginning. And then, you know, then we put a band together. I remember our first band practice was, I remember we went to a taco place, and the 2016 election was on the, like, I just date with all these crazy things, but that was our first band practice, was the night that of the 2016 election, which was a sort of shocking night to be at least in Los Angeles, California. Everywhere it was a shocking night. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, right.
But you know, that was the start. So we put the band together and hit the road, and here we are.
And a story that I know you've told many times, the origin of Mount Joy actually has some Philadelphia area roots, doesn't it?
Yeah. So Sam and I grew up, you know, like around Valley Forge Park, and he actually, his family lives on the mountain, Valley Forge Mountain. And I guess technically he lives on what would be Mount Misery.
Really?
But that, you know, didn't fly. We were trying to pay homage, because we used to go, the first songs I made in high school, I would go and his brother had a little, like, I guess, 4-track or whatever recorder. And we would go up there and we would make songs about the stink bug invasion and all that silly stuff that was happening in our area. And you know, and so we were trying to pay homage to that. So we were like, oh, should we call it Mount Misery? And then it was pretty easy to be like, we could just fudge it and say Mount Joy is it's a slightly lighter name.
You've been described as an alternative rock or folk rock band. How would you describe Mount Joy?
Yeah, you know, I think the cool thing about Mount Joy is that we've done enough things now where, like, we feel like we can make anything on this next project. And, like, that's sort of always been the goal, is, like, you were naming bands and I'm a fan of everything. Like, I really am. And, like, I enjoy so many different styles of music, and I really don't want to get painted in because it's so much harder. I feel for artists that are just like, oh, I'm just a folk artist, you know, and I feel like that's so limiting when you do sit down with your guitar. It's like, so really I would love for people to just someday do enough to be thought of as sounding like Mountjoy, and then, you know, like that be its own thing. Like, you know, I think when I think about the Grateful Dead, what I love about bands that reach that level is like, there are bands that sound like the Grateful Dead, but it covers a lot of genres. But I think the goal is to build something over time and have a catalog that, you know, is its own sort of genre, I guess, in the way it combines others.
We were talking earlier about the creative process and songwriting, and you had mentioned the phrase, you let your hands go and you're almost in like some sort of an altered state. Speaking of altered states, alcohol, cannabis, what do they do to the songwriting process?
You know, I am not a huge drinker, but I smoke weed. And I think I do it in the same way, like you talk about letting your hands go. I think there is, like, when you're trying to truly free associate and maybe kind of unlock your subconscious in that way, I think it can be difficult sometimes to do that if you're overthinking things, if you're thinking things like I think the deadly things to think about are like, are people going to like this? Are, you know, I mean, I think you're always sort of gauging that, of course, but like in the sense of like, this has got to be a big song or this or that. I think like the goal is to just like make something that you feel like is worth chasing. And then I think weed can really help me to sort of like break down that first ego barrier where it's sort of like, oh, like this is going to make so much money, or like this, a track like this or something, whatever. It's like all that stuff I think is really antithetical to just like, why people listen to music. Like I think at the end of the day, it's like, I'm just trying to be an artist and, you know, I think like it's probably true for sports as well. It's like, I'm sure smoking weed before the game is probably not a good, you know, for your athletic ability, but I bet for some of these guys, like, you know, we've watched people come in and really struggle with the yips and stuff like that. It's like, I always think about like, you know, how hard it would be. Those guys have they're so young. They have so much pressure to be this thing. But the best way to be good at what you do is to not think about any of that stuff and just go play basketball or just go play music. And people have already determined that you're good enough, you know, that you can, if you just go do it. So I think for me, I don't have to go run sprints up and down a court. So I can smoke a little bit of weed and sort of forget that I'm this artist in this particular moment of my career and trying to reach these certain goals or whatever, and just sort of play music because I love to do it.
So if you compose something while you're high, do you sort of have to self-check yourself and come down from being high and see if it still resonates with you?
Totally. And it goes the other way too. I think sometimes, you know, you make something when you're high and you're certain that it's really good, and then yeah, like maybe you kind of didn't think about the fact that you weren't playing with, you know, like the tempo was moving too much for a band to ever play with it, or it doesn't quite make sense, too wacky or whatever it is. But I also sometimes go the other way where I will make something sober and then smoke weed and listen to it and kind of realize like, you know what, this lacks a spirit. This is too commercial or something like that. You know, it's not moving me when I'm high. Then like, I sort of am like, this isn't going to be what I want.
Hmm. For those unfamiliar with the music business, it's not just you and four bandmates. It's a host of other people. Just give us an idea as to I hate to put it this way, but the Mountjoy, Incorporated part of things.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got, a manager, who has people that work for him, who do an amazing job. And then, you know, at various times we've had, right now we're free agents. So anyone watching this, no, but record labels, who obviously are helping to deal with all the Spotify stuff. And then a booking agent who's helping us book shows, and she's been with us. And, you know, we're fortunate we've had a lot of the same people from the very beginning, and feel like we have good continuity, and everybody kind of knows each other really well, and it's become kind of this big family. And it doesn't get done without those people. I mean, definitely when it reaches the point that we've been fortunate enough to reach, it's a business too, for sure. And we're fortunate to have good people.
I was on tour for 27 years with an NBA team, and there were at times you would wake up in a city and you'd be staring at the popcorn ceiling in the hotel and not know where you were. Do you sort of have to, you know, kind of remind yourself, because it's just one night after another when you're on tour, weeks at a time, and remember where you are?
Totally. I think Sam Cooper, we were in Columbia, South Carolina last Thursday, and he was sitting just exactly what you were just describing, sitting in the green room. It was downstairs, no windows. And he was like, I have no idea where we are. I was like, well, that one in particular was bad because we had flown in there that day. I was like, you don't remember the airport. You don't remember anything that like cued you in, but happens. It really does. I mean, I'm so fascinated, obviously, by your career too, but I, yeah, it really does happen. I mean, I feel like you were required, I feel like, more to know what was going on in your surroundings since you were detailing it all for us. But
yeah, a fair amount. But it's like anything else. You know, I was always 365 days a year. I'm constantly looking at and ingesting NBA information. So it was like that for me. And then, of course, yeah, there's a formal process of putting stuff down on paper and, you know, keying into that particular night's game. But you certainly have to do the same thing. You're, you know, who's the audience and, you know, what's your set? What are you going to play tonight? I would imagine, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're definitely, there's a, you don't want to do the like, what's up New York in the wrong city. Like that's like that's the cardinal sin. So you definitely don't want to do that. And then, you know, sometimes like, just like you said, sometimes there's things you have to announce or there's something that you know, you're required to promote or something like that. Usually not, but, I will say, I have a question for you if that's allowed.
Go for it, brother.
Well, like, you know, I feel like whether it's, you know, friends or whatever, you know, like with basketball, there's everybody, and I'm sure to do it as long as you did, you obviously love basketball.
Yeah.
I assume you were a fan of the Sixers, you know.
Like, oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, I grew up in Northeast Philly. That was my first love. I go back to the first year of the team in 1963. That's how old I am.
Yeah, well, I remember you were so good historically dropping, you know, all the sort of historical precedent for things and stuff like that. Then you're so close to the team. You know, like, you know, you asked me about Jason Kelsey, and it's like, I almost had to like pull myself back because I didn't want to like, I could have, you know, ruined his night just asking him all this stuff.
Did you find a fanboy on him?
Totally. And,
right.
And I probably did anyways, to be honest, what I'm thinking is you're so close to the team. You probably know things that you can't say. Like, I guess what I'm getting at is like, how hard was it to be sort of such a big Sixers fan? And then also, I think your job is so like to try to, I don't know, paint this picture and allow people to have their own opinions, I guess. Was it hard to know as much as you did and be as big of a fan and do that job?
Not really, because I understood the parameters. I understood the boundaries. I understood what was expected of me. And it's probably not unlike, Matt, when you're on stage. You know what you're there to do. You're not there to tell jokes. You're not there to give a lecture on world history. You're there to play your music, and that's what the fans came out for. So I never forgot who I was talking to, Sixer fans. I try to remember, or at least hopefully I anticipated what it was that they needed. And, you know, I knew my boss was listening. I knew the Sixer people were listening. So it was not time for me to let my hands go, if you know what I'm saying, and just do anything willy-nilly. I had to comport myself. And, you know, hopefully I did. I mean, I lasted for 27 years, so I guess I did something right.
I mean, you're the greatest of all time.
Thank you.
But one thing that you said, you didn't let your hands go, but I feel like those sort of, I wonder, I guess, the, you know, the catchphrases, coming in for a hold on, we're coming in for a landing, you know, stuff like that. Like, that was that at some point improvised, or is that something where you're spending time thinking about those things?
Yeah, no, it was. In fact, I remember the first time I said garbage into gold, George Lynch put back an offensive rebound. And a lot of that just came from, you know, scripting halftime features. I became comfortable with the English language. And Mike Emmerich was on my Mount Rushmore, the great hockey announcer, and he had 10 different ways of describing a slap shot. So I figure that, you know, you're the TV guy. People can already see what's going on. So what can you add as the announcer, you know, to sort of add a layer to that? And that's kind of where that stuff came from. But enough about me, Matt. I got to apologize to the ladies who might be ogling at you, but you and your girlfriend, Ingrid, got hitched recently. Is that right?
I did. I just recently got married, which is amazing. We opted for the small backyard thing, and yeah, we're super pumped. It was amazing.
Why is she the girl for you?
You know, I think the true answer is that doing what we do is difficult to, and that's why I feel like there's lots of sad songs out there in the world, probably, is like, I think artists get sent on this whirlwind and you're traveling a lot. And I'm not to bring it back to you, but I do wonder, like, you know, it's like eventually it's hard to have a family. It's hard to have people who are stationed here or whatever waiting for you to come back. You know, and so I think seeing like the way she loves the band, she's sort of Ingrid is just like sort of attacked the Mountjoy thing as though she's a part of it, you know, and in a way where she, you know, now we get to have her out a little bit, which is nice. But she just, I think obviously the reasons of I love her and she loves me and we have this great relationship, I think we make each other better, all of those things. But then also like just seeing the way she supported what I was doing, and you know, obviously she has her own career as well, but I think that was a huge part of what made me feel like very quickly like, oh, this is the one, don't screw this up, Matt.
Right. She's not just hooking up with you because you're Matt Quinn and you're Mountjoy. She's hooking up with you because you're Matt Quinn and you weren't necessarily anything at the time. Let me ask you a question now. What's next for Mountjoy?
You know, we're about to go on tour. We've been on, basically been on tour. I'm on a little bit of a break. I leave on Sunday for Toronto. And hopefully can bring Siakam back with me or something like that. back on the road starting in Toronto on Monday.
And you're going international too, right? Is that your first time?
Yeah, not our first time, but definitely the biggest shows over there for us that we've ever played. Opening up for a band, Greta Van Fleet, that's like doing arenas over there. So we'll get to play in front of a lot of people. And so basically gone and leave on Sunday, and then I'm pretty much gone till Thanksgiving. I'll be coming home from Europe. And yeah, it's just been such a great year of touring for us. And then, you know, we'll hopefully finish strong here. This is the playoff push, as you will.
Matt Quinn, Conestoga High, Mountjoy, off and running, making music a career. Thousands of people, now millions of people love you just from the Astrovan song. What a life. What a thing. Thank you, my friend, for joining us. We greatly appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much. What a thrill. Such a huge fan of all the times you've shouted into my living room and made my made my family jump up and down. So thank you so much.
You got it, my friend. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts.